Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Don't Quote Me. I'm your host, Orla Condon, and this week I'm joined by pop culture enthusiast, Jen Gannon. Coming up on today's show, it was the biggest night in fashion last night as Met Gala 2023 took place in New York. But do we care as much anymore? Certainly not as much as many cared about the recent wedding of Sofia Richie and Elliot Grange in the French Riviera, or as much as we care about the romance rumours between co-stars Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell that have been all over the internet. In other news, Jen is telling us why we have to watch HBO and BBC's new show Rain Dogs and binge Married at First Sight Australia. Yes, again, I know we're obsessed. Well, I'm talking all about my new obsession with Netflix's The Diplomat and teasing what fans can expect from the Bridgerton spin-off series Queen Charlotte, which lands on a streaming service on May 4th. Let's get stuck in. It is a big week for fashion and pop culture enthusiasts alike, as it was the first Monday in May, Met Gala Monday. Here to discuss that and some other headline news, Jen Gannon, how are you doing?
Hello, I survived the Met Ball. Or the Met Gala. You're not supposed to say the Met Ball.
Yeah.
Because it's like the Met Bar where all the old Saints and Spice Girls used to go back in like early 2000s. It's not all of those connotations that Anna Wintour does not want. I just ruined by calling it the Met Ball.
I wonder, is gala probably synonymous with like like fundraising and charity? Because obviously it's the premise of the event in theory is to raise money for the Met Gallery. So presumably that's the way. I actually never thought about that before at all. Like gala is quite not
just
sexy.
Sounds fancier.
Yeah. How did you watch it? I know a lot of people were staying up. Obviously, there's the time difference. I think the red carpet kicked off at like 6 p.m. U.S. time yesterday evening, which was much later here. A lot of people stay up to watch it come in. I personally did not. I just caught Kim K before I went to bed. But did you watch it? Did you try and stay up and watch it, or did you cram it all inside?
Like, I watched Vogue had a live stream.
Yeah.
Which you would have expected Vogue's live stream to be something special. And it was so boring.
Yeah.
It was just the dullest thing I think I've ever seen. And it's so annoying because I love Andre Leontali. And for me, like, you know, the Met, like, I know he only died like last year, but it feels like even between last year and this year that something has been missing. Like, and not that he was doing the red carpet even back then. He did the red carpet, I think, the last time in 2019 or 18. But he was so good at it. And so he brought it to life in a way that now you're seeing with like influencers or other people that have to kind of replace them. It's just, I know Emma Chamberlain is good at her job. Like, I mean, doing that, like, I find her funny and I find her funnier than I thought I would. Like, there's something about her. But at the same time, she's not Andre Leontali. And then the selection of people they had on the live feed, like Derek Blasberg, who was just like this ace based about town. He like does a bit of work for Vanity Fair. He consults for Succession. So
yeah,
he's like, Mr. If Kendall is wearing this watch, that's the watch that rich people wear. He's that guy.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, but he's not an interesting person.
Yeah.
And he's not a presenter.
He's not a personality. Yeah.
No, very dull. Like,
yeah. And who else was on it? Lala Ann. Did she do some of it? Lala Ann, yeah. She did some of it. And Chloe, what's her name? Is it Fiverr?
Who's like Saturday Night Live. She was like a comedian. She actually was a great Timothée Chalamet impression, but she didn't really pull out last night because it wasn't there. But the three of them together, obviously they have no vibe. Mm. They don't really know each other. It's like they've just been thrown together. I think Derek was there like he's my mate. He was there to kind of, you know, give a bit of gravitas and be like, oh, yeah, I'm knowledgeable. But like, he didn't do it in a fun way. It was kind of sober, very boring. Lala was okay, but it felt like she was out of her depth. I think when she was talking to some people, she just kept on saying the same things kind of over and over again and just feel prepared. And then Chloe, it was like she didn't know what she wanted to be. Like, was she like, am I here as a comedian? Am I here as a hot girl? Like, it just didn't gel for me at all, which was really interesting. Like,
I think Chloe was quite disappointing in that, like you just said, it felt like she was trying to kind of play both sides of the coin. She was trying to be like, I'm here for the comedic effect. I'm here as a person who has a vague interest in fashion, is now on the red carpet debate. But really, my kind of bit of zing to this is comedy, because you've got the fashionistas, you know, you've got Emma Chamberlain, you've got that Anthony, you're probably going to be more engaged in that kind of conversation. And obviously, a lot of people may or may not have seen the clip of her talking to Stella McCartney and Aubrey Plaza, and that gaffe of her seemingly not knowing who Stella McCartney was, or it was a very awkward interaction. And I think it's very hard to then play that off if you're trying to kind of fit the mold as like, I'm here for my fashion credentials, which she's not, and that's totally fine. But I think she kind of fell between two stools there. And this kind of stuff reminds me of obviously this is a little bit back, was it at the Emmys? Was it Ashley Graham and Hugh Grant? The Emmys?
The Oscars.
So that interview. Oscars.
Yeah.
And he got torn apart for that interview. And then you felt like that wave of hatred towards Hugh Grant, like, oh, he was so rude. And then you felt this wave back, at least probably on our timelines, of people who kind of work in this sphere being like, well, like, Hugh Grant has to do this 50 times in the next half hour, getting asked the same questions. And this is clearly a person who is not prepared. So like, you can't really blame him for being like, what are you doing? Like, we all have a role to play in this ecosystem. And if you're not kind of studied and ready for it, then it's kind of, it just exposes why kind of influencers and, you know, star power isn't enough to do that job all the time.
Exactly. And I think it's a weird thing as well with the Met Gala, because you're like, well, what exactly is it that you want anymore, Anna? Like, she wants to kind of bring in a younger audience, obviously, but then do they really care about fashion heritage or, you know, who Stella McCartney is? Or do they want to just see what Kylie Jenner is wearing, or, you know, and then move on and have TikToks break it down the bits? But like, do they care about, like, you know, the stuff that like Andrea Leontali would have cared about, and stuff that Karl Lagerfeld himself would have cared about, you know, art and design and art history and whatever? And I think that's the problem with the Met Gala last night. It kind of fell flat for me completely with the theme and with the way it was presented and the people who were at it. It just kind of was it wasn't exciting at all.
I totally agree. And I wonder if it is going to be something that doesn't change going forward, given the idea of the event is to kind of pay homage to, like, you know, designers or, you know, tastes in design or certain themes from, you know, fashion history, and then also trying to kind of make it this real young space and have all these like really young kind of culturally cool people there. And it just doesn't feel, as much as it's exciting to see people like Emma Chamberlain, you know, hosting for Vogue, it doesn't feel authentically plugged in to Anna Wintour. Whereas previously I felt like, even though I wouldn't consider myself, I'm not a fashionista, I love it for like, oh, they look great. Like, I don't hammer people for the theme. I don't, like, I, it doesn't, I'm just like about kind of the big dresses and the costume and the food and what happened to that kind of stuff.
Like, I like fashion the way men like football. Like, as in, I don't put me on the pitch myself, but I like to talk shite about it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I can do that all the live long day. Yeah. I love doing that, but, like, I'm not putting myself out there going, you know, I look amazing all the time, or I'm like, you know, I want to make myself into a fashionista or whatever. Yeah. It's not like that. But I just have that kind of interest in it. And I think, I think Vogue are at a really weird time where people are like, you know, Anna needs to leave, basically. Mm. Like, she's there too long. She's too long in the tooth. Like, people are shredding every US Vogue cover of the past year, I'm going to say. They're all, like, people are tearing them apart online, saying, you know, they look really bland. It looks really disinterested. It looks very boring when you compare it to, like, Vogue UK, that are taking chances and taking risks, and they're very bold, like, and really original looking. That American Vogue is kind of, like, a bit yawny right now. Yeah. And people are, like, really looking at Anna going, she should have been gone ages ago. And I have that feeling. And if anything, I think that, like, last night is going to cement that in people's minds. They're like, she's all over the place. She's like, you know, hey, kids. Like, she is that meme of, like, Steve Buscemi, like, in a way. And they're like, oh, you shouldn't be like that. You're out of winter, like.
Yeah. You know? And it, I know. I mean, look, the Devil Wears Prada link is always made for obvious reasons, but, like, it definitely does feel like that kind of last quarter of the movie where Meryl Streep is, like, battling with, you know, does she hold on to power? How does she force it? And it does kind of feel like there are these weird parallels now. Like, I just feel like Anna Wintour, even when I was younger and I didn't, like, give a shit about Vogue, or I didn't give a shit about, like, designers because they weren't in my realm, I understood her influence, even though I didn't, like, really know that much about her. I was like, she's, like, a really respected person and, like, can literally do what she wants and can literally call whatever trend she wants a trend and make it happen. She has that level of influence. And I guess we talk about this on here all the time. I know we've spoken about it on My Bottom Paper loads. Like, the idea of influence has changed so much in recent years because of TikTok and all of these other things, all these other elements that mean you don't need to, it's not a select few anymore that have that power. It's very much something shared. It is very much fleeting. It is, and I just think someone like her, she feels disjointed with that idea. But let's get in specifically to this one. We had some controversy this year based around the theme. And I think let's start there. It was announced that the theme this year was based on Karl Lagerfeld. It was a line of beauty to honor his career. He was a regular attendee at the event throughout his life. And Vogue said this is dedicated to the legacy of fashion's most hyperactive and prolific mastermind, Karl Lagerfeld, a polymath designer who put even the most adroit multitaskers to shame, and whose uniform, staunchly starched collars and his ponytail became the stuff of legend. Worth noting that he designed for Balmain, he designed for Chloe, Fendi, Chanel, obviously. He had his own brand, he worked with tons of other brands, but, like, he is very synonymous with a lot of the designer garb that you see today if you walked into BT, down to Karl himself. Very influential, that is not to belittle his influence on fashion, but he's also incredibly controversial because of a lot of really outrageous things he has said about a wide plethora of topics. And we're not talking, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. We're talking the last 10, 15 years. This guy has been, like, he has said stuff that is pretty outrageous about stuff that I think we could all agree is kind of, like, wrong, up until as recently as 2018, the year before he died. We're talking, mostly people would probably know him for his fatphobic comments. I mean, he was disgusted by people, like, fat people. He just hated them and didn't think they deserved a place to be seen or admired. I know he made comments about, you know, nobody wants to see curvy women on magazines, and comments about, what was the sweatpants thing? It was like,
you've given up on life. If you're wearing sweatpants, it means you've given up on life. But, like, also to that same degree, he was the person that brought in the first Chanel trainer. So, like, the man was a mass of contradictions. Mm. And a lot of the time he hid behind saying everything he said to be flagrant in a very Kanye way, like that we used to know, to rile people up, but also that he was playing a character, this character of Karl Lagerfeld. And I think with the fatphobic, with that whole issue, he was on the bigger side for a very long time.
Yeah.
After a breakup when he worked for Fendi, and he was absolutely, you know, like massacred in the fashion industry, and felt embarrassed and really disliked himself. And that a lot of that is like this internal, like self-hatred.
Definitely. Yeah.
I think a lot of that tormented him forever. And he wrote this horrible diet book where it was like, you know, basically don't eat anything and everybody should be a size six. And, it, you know, I remember he was interviewed by Channel 4 News, Cathy Newman, and he was like, when, you know, she was like, we're going to see society is going to get, you know, much broader and more inclusive. And he was like, yeah, unfortunately, you know, women are going to be allowed to get fat, is what he said.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just that. Also, he was horrible about like Angela Merkel's immigration policies. Like, he's German and he just thought Germany was going to the dogs. Like, and he said some really horrific things around immigration. I mean, he's a very strange character, very strange human being. He was born in 1933. He fluffed his date of birth a lot of the time because he didn't want to be associated with part of Hitler's reign. Didn't want to be associated with the fact that he was born around the time that Hitler was in power. So kind of fluffed his age to make it look like he was a war baby, a post-war baby, which he wasn't. But he still held those bizarre views.
Yeah.
And if you ever watched the documentary Lagerfeld Confidential that came out in 2007, that's super interesting because I had a lot of interviews with him. Don't know if this is something that he's pretending to be or if this is his true feelings. And he does talk about, like, you know, being abused as a child, as a young child, but also kind of being like, that was the making of me kind of thing. So he has these bizarre views that are really stuff that is so offensive that you can't actually believe that, you know, somebody like, I mean, but also at the same time, I have to say there's other people that will say he was so generous. He was a very generous person with his time and his money. As I said, I'll mention him a million times. He was, but Audrey Leontali, like, was one of a very good friend of his for a while. Now, they did kind of have a weird falling out, but like he said, Carl has them all as friends, quote unquote, because that's just the temperamental kind of mentality he had. But like, he paid for him after his beloved grandmother died. He paid for him to go to his house in France. He gave him a check for $50,000 when Audrey Leontali turned 50. Like, there's a lot of stories about he put people's children to school, and like, he was generous with his money and his time. And Anna Wintour, because they were Bessie Bates, she said, well, as close as you could get to be a best friend with that man, said that, you know, publicly he's very different to the way he acts privately. And there's no excusing. I'm not making excuses for any of his behavior, obviously, because I do think it's...
No, but I guess it explains, it gives context as to why this pedestal would be given to him and they would pay him this honor. You know what I mean? It's not that they're just, you know...
Yeah. Also, it's the arch. It is the arch. And I have to say, I have to put my hands up here and say, I love like that era of Chanel from when he took over from 1983 to the mid 90s was like, you did not see the absolute genius of couture, proper genius that you did with that man and those clothes that he designed.
Yeah.
There are all the things that stick in my mind when I was growing up. Again, it's fashion, just looking at those photographs. And he was the one, you know, we always think of Versace when we think of the supermodels and bringing the supermodels to the forefront of, you know, magazines and creating the supermodel, basically. But, you know, Karl Lagerfeld put the supermodel, put Chanel clothes on the supermodels first. And, you know, people forget that. And he created that. And he was such a creative, interesting, the way he took Chanel and changed that brand forever. And you will never have somebody like that again. He's a very kind of Andy Warhol figure in that way, but also at the same time, reprehensible. So
it's wild, isn't it? Because I feel like the word iconic is thrown around these days on everything. Like, it's just like flippantly used. But I think for his work, it is very appropriate given the imagery that we associate with these major brands, like the Chanel, the classic Chanel quilted bags, the Fendi upside down F logo that we all know, like all of these, like the tweed, the black and white Chanel, like all of this stuff that is so now like hard to separate from the brands, were all birthed from this guy. But yet you then hear all of the stuff that he said, you're like, wow, like this is And I guess it's just interesting to see someone so recently. I mean, this in 2018, he spoke out about the Me Too movement, basically dismissing the claims of many women in Hollywood about the sexual assault and harassment that they had faced, you know, throughout their careers and various people, mostly men, who had done that to them. And he just said some really dismissive, horrible stuff about kind of get over it, or like, well, it's taken him long enough to come out with it. Yeah. Like, lots of this kind of victim blamey stuff. And I think to hear a man in 2018 say this about a movement of, you know, that was supported by nearly all women in Hollywood, and then see many of those women march out last night, you know, with literally his name, like, adorned on their dresses. And it's like, it's such an interesting conflict. And I just wonder, we see this a lot in sport, I think, like, you know, men who behave badly but are very good at sport, so things are forgiven. And sure, sure, look, we all make mistakes at this. And like, the level of protection that being talented at something can give mostly men, and I see it often in sport. And he's, Carl Laverty seems to be a guy that has also kind of come in under that safety net of, yeah, look, he said that, but I mean, look at all the stuff he did. And I just think it's really interesting, because you can't discredit the work. You can't discredit the influence that he's had on, like, every, I mean, again, Meryl Streep said it, like, that's not just a blue blouse that you picked. Like, everything we wear has had some kind of legs or arms into his world. But it's just like, it's a lot of shit that he said. And it's a lot of shit in recent years that flies in the face of a lot of the stuff that these stars come out and say that they're against. And it's like, I find it very interesting.
It's like that. I mean, for me, I mean, it'd be like if the Oscars were like, let's have a whole ceremony celebrating Roman Polanski, or, you know, Woody Allen. Like, in latter times, well, if you look at Woody Allen, we have known these rumors or whatever, or like the actual case with his daughter for a very long time. And yet Miley Cyrus was still in his, you know, this Amazon series. People, you know, Timothée Chalamet signed on to be in that film with Selena Gomez, and that's very recent. And then with someone like Roman Polanski, you had people like Kate Winslet and Johnny Depp like signing that letter about him in support of him and his artistry. Yeah. And he got a standing ovation when The Pianist won, you know, best film, or like at the Oscars that time. And that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And I do think when the time rolls around for Roman Polanski to, you know, exit, I will have conflicting feelings, because I do think he is a genius. I think, like, Rosemary's Baby, I think Knife in the Water, I think Revulsion, I am revolted by him, though. And so many of his films, like Chinatown, they're all fucking amazing films, but like, that man is horrific and never changed his point of view about like how misogynistic he is, and that's entrenched in him. And that's, this is what we're facing up to as a society. It's like, what do you do, and how do we play this? And for the Met Gala, I think Anna Wintour was like, he was my mate. I don't give a shit. I get to override everything, which is a problem in itself. And another reason why people are like, hey, she should be gone if she's doing this. And B, she's like, oh, we should separate, you know, the art from the artist kind of thing yet again, which is like, where are we with this? Where are we
with that? Which is so interesting, given, you know, Condé Nast is the publisher who owns Vogue, who owns Teen Vogue, who owns Glamour, and it owns endless other titles. It's very interesting that, you know, like you say, that's probably the thought process, that like, oh, we can separate the art from the other stuff, because this is a celebration of art, when publications like Teen Vogue and publications like Glamour have very much leaned into the political space and tried to find that balance. But the bottom line is this okay for our reader? Are we doing the right thing for our reader? And it feels like Vogue is not in that space. It feels like Vogue is still trying to be an authority on whether it's okay or not for us to. And again, I still watched it all. I still consumed a lot of content. I still think it's great for the get-ups. It's great for the goss.
Totally.
Great for a pregnancy announcement. It's great for a couple reveal. Like, it's great for all that stuff. But I just find it very interesting how, like, that Vogue seems to have separated itself out from kind of the rest of the publications within its media house. And just kind of said, yeah, well, get over the fact that he thought gay men shouldn't be parents. Like, and what? And what? And then like a couple of years ago, they're like, we're celebrating all things camp and like leaning into, you know, celebrating all the, and it's like, okay, grand. So you can lean into gay culture for 1 year, and then the next year you can. So I just find it interesting.
Oh, it's extremely interesting. And like the thing about it is, she is one of the last. Not that I'm blaming it all on Anna, because a lot of
yeah,
it,
yeah, Anna,
you know, wagon. But like a lot of it is to do with advertising as well, and how much money and power is behind that, and yeah, all of that that we know of. But at the same time, she is one of the last of the old guards from Condé Nast that is still in that job. Like, let's say with Braden Carter on Vanity Fair, he sat, we will, you know, we have to remember that Braden Carter sat on the Epstein story and wouldn't let them publish it in Vanity Fair. And they could have broken that story years ago. And then he, you know, changed into the guard, they had to get rid of him. And yeah, it's like that kind of entrenched old school opinion, old school editorial, is what Anna is doing in her own way now.
Yeah.
By saying, yeah, I'm still going on with this, and this theme is going to be Lagerfeld till I don't care.
Yeah.
And we'll see what the results are, because I do think critically, and also just from a visual perspective, I don't think people were wowed.
Yeah. At all. I was going to say, like, I feel like as much as we've spoken about how iconic his work was and how much of an influence he's had on the fashion industry, there's obviously like a top five or six things that we could be like, okay, it's the black and white tweed, it's the, you know, this, that, and the other, and you can picture them so clearly. And that resulted in a red carpet that was very predictable. I mean, there were some beautiful looks, but it was very predictable. There was very few looks that I was like, wow. Like, you have those looks over the years that you can recall so clearly because you were like, that was just such an amazing moment. They absolutely nailed the theme. They looked amazing. Like, that's going to be in their best looks video in 5 years' time when they're going through all their looks. There wasn't a lot of that this year. There was also a bit of like...
Nobody turned up. Nobody turned up as well.
Nobody
turned up. There was no high ticket, high value. Like, Beyonce wasn't there. Gaga wasn't there. Ariana Grande wasn't there. Zendaya wasn't there.
Zendaya. Hailey Bieber. I know she's not like top tier, but I think for that younger demographic, she was. Timothy wasn't there. Blake Lively.
Harry Styles wasn't there. It was just a lot of big people that you would expect to see that bring that kind of flamboyancy to the Met. I mean, the only person that we were like, we're waiting for was Rihanna. And even when she did appear, I was like, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, she looked beautiful, but it was like, okay, grand. It was nearly the combination of her and A$AP Rocky together was nearly like better. Like him wearing the jeans with like the kilt over top, and he looked amazing. But
it looked amazing after kicking that young one in the face. Where is she? She should have been like, I want to know her backstory.
I just want one pop culture story that's not problematic. Just one. There's always some asshole fella who's done some asshole shit. And I'm like, guys, you're ruining everything for us.
Well, how could he ruin that, Rihanna? That's her thing, you know? And why was he allowed in?
I just don't know if we'll ever top like the pizza dress. Like, I just don't know if we'll ever top it. Like, trying to do the fucking gas pizza dress, the little red bob. Like, it was just
iconic. Like,
perfection.
Just
perfection.
Absolutely stunning. And Claudia Schiffer didn't turn up, and she was Carl's muse. Like, as in, she was the Lagerfeld bride at the end of every Chanel show. It was always Claudia, Claudia, Claudia.
Yeah.
And she didn't turn up. And that was weird. Yeah. And then Kate Moss turned up, and she was very much a Chanel, 90s Chanel gal. And she looked, I love Kate Moss. She looked the worst that Mossy has ever looked in her life. She
I thought it looked cute, but I was like, this is not the event for this. You know what I mean? Like, this doesn't feel like you've matched the event to the dress. Like,
she looked very tired, I have to say. I was like, did she just get like thrown off a flight, like immediately, and thrown out onto the carpet?
To be fair though, like, she walked the red carpet with her daughter, who is the absolute spit of her. And like, if you're walking the red carpet with your daughter, who is the image of you, who is what, like 25 years younger?
True.
Like, your face is not real apples. You know what I mean?
Show her how to do it, Mona. Because don't tell me you don't have some of those iconic Chanel looks in the back of your wardrobe, Kate.
Come here.
I mean, the one person that I was like, this is what I wanted from everyone was Giselle. And I'm no Giselle fan. I find her bland. I find her just boring as a model. But my God, like, she is a super model. She worked every inch of that outfit off the charts.
And there's not one bad picture of her. Like, there was a clip of her on TikTok where she was swirling around. She had this big kind of feathered kind of coat over a white kind of slim dress. And she was just spinning, and people were like, what the fuck? And it was like, no, every picture, is golden. Stunning. Every single one is a winner. Like, yeah. She just gets it. She gets the moment that she has. She knows how to make it work for her.
It was fucking glam because it was like post-divorce.
Yeah.
By Tom Brady. This is why he could have won. And like, that's the reason, but this is just me being an old person. That's the reason why these women were supermodels. Because with the likes of someone like Kendall Jenner, who cannot model to save her life, and people are like, oh, well, it is modeling. It's just fucking. And it's like, yeah, that bitch cannot fucking walk. Have you seen her? Also, she refuses to acknowledge the fact that she has a neck. Please use it. Like, I've never seen the worst modeling in my whole life. I've seen girls just struck down like Henry Street that should be on catwalks compared to her. And the only reason why she is there is because she's a nepo baby and like family money. And there's so many of them these days. And that's the difference. Giselle is just like this Brazilian beauty. Kate Moss was this kid from Croydon. And like, this was what modeling was and why it was so exciting and why people went mad for it. These girls are so bland now. And you could see that last night with the difference between someone like Giselle and someone like a Jenner. They're like, no comparison. Like,
Yeah, absolutely. Giselle, it was definitely a moment. Before we dive into some of the specific looks, there was a couple of stories that probably would have been bigger stories had they not been in amongst the madness. The first story of the night, Anna Wintour seemingly confirms her romance with Bill Nye, which has been rumored for years. They walked the red carpet or the cream carpet together.
She fresh carpet. It was exactly like two pennies.
Awful. And then when the cockroach came, I was like, oh my God, this is awful.
Someone on Twitter were like, Carl is there. Look. That cockroach is out of the time of its life.
Oh my God, time of its life. There was more pictures taken of that cockroach there last night. Like, unreal. But that was one of the first stories that came out. Then Serena Williams arrived, confirming that she was pregnant with her second baby, and put up some cute caption about she got a plus one or something like that. So did Carrie Claus. She also confirmed that she was pregnant with her second child last night. A similar caption was posted, I think, on her social media. The Kardashian-Jenners were there, as we've discussed. Yeah. There's been weeks of rumors that they would not be invited this year, that they were taking the Met Gala in a new direction and they were leaving the Kardashian-Jenners out with trash and they were moving on with it. Absolute bollocks. They just said, sorry, Khloe, sorry, Kourtney, sorry, Chris, not this year. I think, Bob.
I know. If they hadn't arrived.
Yeah.
It would have been a weird year because they're like, well, who else is there of that kind of, you know, to look at? You always know they're going to attract someone's attention. And like, widest audience possible, if that's what you want, then ask them. You have to ask them.
Yeah.
Even though Courtney's invite got lost in the post after last year was so abysmal.
But like, come here. I just think the Courtney stuff, we'll get to it in a while when we discuss our next topic. The Courtney stuff is just so, I don't know. This de-influencing Kardashian stuff is very interesting to me and their kind of fading influence and what place they're going to hold in that space over the next few years.
They're in their flop era. And if they think they're dragging my Timmy into their flop era, another thing called it.
Some of the standout looks from last night for me, please jump in with comments, agreements, disagreements. I've said these for both good and bad reasons. One of the big ones that was making headlines was Jared Leto. He was wearing Karl Lagerfeld. He was dressed as, how do you say the name?
Schubert.
The cat.
Yeah.
Carl's beloved cat. Awkwardly, he wasn't the only one dressed as a cat. Doja Cat also, she was wearing Oscar de la Renta. She had like a prosthetic.
She looked like Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Like a very Planet of the Apes. It did not look like a cat to me. It looked like the Grinch. Like, it was weird.
Grinch,
it wasn't like a sexy pussycat moment. And also just gave me bad vibes because it reminded me of cats. And I was like, I don't want to think about that film anymore.
It's too soon.
Too soon. Yeah.
I do like when people just have a bit of fun with it. And I did like how she was like, did you see her interview with Emma Chamberlain that she did where she answered all the questions like with meows?
Brilliant.
And I was like, do you know what? Take the piss. Have a laugh. Yeah. Get in there. Like, you've worn your prosthetic nose. Like, Come on, you're not going to be like, yeah, I'm wearing Oscar de la Renta. Like, do you know what I mean?
I loved as well when she was vaping in the background. So it was like she was caught on camera, like having a vape on the carpet with her fucking mad prosthetic face. It was brilliant. I was like, gonna melt? Like, watch yourself.
Look, her whiskers and her elf bar.
That was really annoying to me. It's annoying because Jared Leto. But like, what was really funny was when I was following it online, loads of people thought it was Taylor Swift because they were waiting for Taylor to come and they were like, she loves cats. Oh, she would totally do this. And then when the head came off, all the like Swifties are like, oh, shit. And then apparently he's playing, I don't know how true this is, Jared Leto's playing Karl Lagerfeld in an upcoming biopic, which I think is the worst idea ever.
I just didn't find it like, and there were so many people being like, oh my God, it's amazing. It's like, is it?
No.
Is it? Like,
yeah. No.
Is it? I don't think it is. Like, it's, he's worn a giant cat costume. Like, I just don't think it is. A lot of vintage last night. Nicole Kidman in vintage Chanel from that. Like, I remember it like it's yesterday. There's a Y4 Chanel ad where she's sat looking at the Eiffel Tower and it was just stunning. She wore that same dress last night. Looked equally as stunning nearly 20 years later. Like, insane.
Is Keith Urban going to do something else with himself?
I like him just kind of being there and adoring her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just mean, when is the Lisa Rinna hair going to go? Even Lisa Rinna has changed her hair. And yet Keith Urban still has her old hair. Like, when is that going to end?
Yeah.
I just want for Nicole.
I know. He needs to kind of modernize, doesn't he? But like, also, I'm like, you know what, Keith, it works in the space you're in. You have the same, you know what I mean? I just like how adoringly he always looks at her. And how he doesn't ever try and like steal her moment. It's just nice to see him kind of, you watch them and then he kind of steps back and lets her do her thing and then he kind of just
Why he has that hair, because he knows it just won't detract from Nicole.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it, actually. With lots of vintage. We had Margot Robbie was also wearing vintage Chanel, which I thought was quite funny given the criticism for Margot Robbie and her Chanel partnership.
Well, now that's because she's got a new stylist. Hello, Insider Gossip, my favorite stylist ever. Like, she had a terrible stylist. I can't say that. Well, I mean, my taste, her stylist was really doing her dirty. I'm not the only person that said this.
No, the internet was overwhelmingly supportive of this.
Was putting her in absolute shite. And like, I think the pinnacle of it was they made her look like The Handmaid's Tale, like mixed with like a marquee. They just had her in this giant red plain dress and everyone was like, oh my God, she cannot have the same stylist before Barbie comes out. So cut to when the Barbie, like, there was, what was that, Comic-Con, when they launched Barbie last week? So I was like, she looks absolutely stunning. I was like, what the hell's going on here? I looked up and she's using my favorite stylist, Andrew Muckamal, who is Zoe Kravitz's stylist. He used to be in Kel on Earth, the Kelly Catrone spin-off of The Hills. He was one of the, he was actually Kelly's assistant. And I have followed his career since then because I am in love with him. But, I'm so glad that they're working together because I do think she looks amazing. It's a vast improvement.
She looked good. Sookie Waterhouse, I thought, looked amazing last night. I know she got a bit of criticism for it being quote unquote boring. I just adore her and I just thought it was amazing. She was in vintage Fendi. She was there with Robert Pattinson. They were being very cute.
Else was there? FKA Twigs was there.
Yeah.
And Kristen Stewart.
The whole gang.
All of that exes.
The lineup is full. Like, they're all there. Who else was a standout? Olivia Wilde. She was in Chloe. There was another attendee in Chloe as well who looked, in my opinion, better.
So she was wearing the white version of it and the other attendee was wearing the kind of navy version of it. The navy version was so much nicer.
It was cool. Sydney Sweeney had a standout moment again. Like, people were really excited about her. She was in Miu Miu. She looked amazing. So
bombshell.
Good.
Like, for me, there's like three bombshells. It was like Sydney Sweeney, Kiki Palmer. My God, she looked unreal. Incredible. Yeah. And obviously Anne Hathaway.
They were like, my God,
incredible look at bombshells. Like,
just the transformation, just quickly to sidetrack to Anne Hathaway. the overhaul she has done to her career from being quote unquote one of the most hated women in Hollywood, like so unpopular, so uncool, to now having this moment where she's like this kind of slight, like outside of the traditional age gap for an it girl, but she's having like this like late it girl moment. And it's like, and that's no discrimination towards her age, but usually it's like the like young 20s and I'm like, hi babies. She looked amazing. Like her whole body right now is just like, it's like a different person. It's like so exciting to see her having this resurgence.
And it was a really clever idea because it was Versace, but it was like vintage Versace, like as in Liz Hurley, like the dress, like with the safety pin.
Yeah.
But also it was a Chanel twist on that. It was the kind of piece, right? The Chanel tweed.
Oh,
it just looks stunning. And she had that backcombed kind of fonty, like Bridget Bardot hair.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Amazing.
A moment.
Amazing.
What a moment.
But yeah, Sydney's really just an absolute standout last night. Who else was kind of exciting?
Well, Kristen Stewart turned up to be the Timothée Chalamet I didn't get.
Yeah,
it was like she was cosplaying as Timmy for me.
Oh, she looked
which
great,
was great
though,
because I love her too. She looked amazing. She was wearing resort wear, so it was the men's from I want to say 2006 or was it 16, but it was like cruise wear, so it was men's wear. But I wish she had worn the hat, because I had a cool kind of Panama hat on the original one.
Oh, and I kind of liked her hair being real, like,
loved it.
You know, pomade, mesh, whatever. Mm. So, like, look, a lot of the menswear looks were very disappointing last night. But there were a few exceptions to those rules. Bad Bunny, I thought, looked amazing. He was in Doc Mess. He looked really good. Lil Nas X was in Head to Toe Swarovski. So if you haven't seen the pictures, I think you're imagining correctly what it looked like. There was a few like really interesting and fun menswear looks. What's his name? Tyco,
yeah.
Yeah, Tyco, he looked amazing.
He looked better than Rita Ora.
Yeah.
Which like,
yeah,
normally is true too. But
he really did.
We'll
save that for a different day. Yeah. But no, there were some exciting menswear looks last night as well, which is good to see, because I think even up until a couple of years ago, that just wasn't the case.
Exactly.
I think until Kanye wore denim jeans or a denim jacket on the Met Gala.
And Chadwick Boseman that year, where the theme was like religious, whatever, he just was so amazing that night.
Yeah. And I think now we're getting a lot more of that, which is very exciting. Yeah. Overall, let's wrap up this really short segment. Overall, disappointing. Still a lot of stories came out of it. It still has its place in the calendar. And I think there's definitely a salvageable event there. Like it is really, really like anticipated by people up and down the spectrum, from, you know, people who are really in that space and work in that space and really look at this night as for influence, and also just people like myself who sit at home on Instagram too late on the Monday night to be like, oh geez, they all look gorgeous. Like it definitely has a place, but it felt like it was kind of losing its grip on it a little bit this year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You want to tighten those reins and make it just more of a moment where it used to be. That's what it needs to be.
Some person who is absolutely tightening their grip on influence and is having, I mean, I have obsessed over this for 2 weeks now, and I'm so glad we finally get to talk about it. Sophia Richie, 24 years young, got married 2 weeks ago to Elliot Grange in what was... he's from a wealthy family. Whatever, Elliot, I'm so sorry. Got married in this like expectedly beautiful celebrity wedding in France. And as much as that all was lovely, for me, it was just this masterclass in brand building, you know, marketing yourself, creating a space for yourself in the pop culture space. Like what her team has done in 2 weeks will be taught in marketing courses across the globe. Like it was insane, the influence that this event had. I mean, the stuff Met Gala could only have anticipated, like I could only wish for itself.
It's just bizarre to me. It's bizarre to me because I was like, oh, do I have to give a shit about Sophia Richie now? Like, I don't give a shit about her. Who cares? And then it's like TikTok after TikTok after TikTok.
Yeah.
Get ready with me from like, you know, before the night before she was heading over. Get ready with me on the day of her wedding from all her bridesmaids. Like they did it in such a clever way of knowing exactly who their market is, and sucking the goddamn life out of them.
Yeah.
Like, and then it was like a virus.
Yeah.
It just hit everybody at the same time. And you're like,
whether you want to, this was our latest pop culture pandemic. People were like, if you want it or not, you're getting served this content. Like, you're just not escaping it.
And it's like, I don't know. Like, I mean, everything I've learned about this wedding has been against my will. And that's, it's scary though. Like, that is scary to me because it's not like a wedding I don't give a shit about. It's not like, oh, it's, you know, Madonna's getting married or, you know what I mean? Like, somebody that you're like, oh my God, like a Beyonce vow renewal or something like exciting.
Yeah.
Like, it's some little bitch who I don't give a shit about, who's as mousy as fuck. And the last time we saw her, she was hanging off Scott Disick.
But this is what I mean, right?
Amazing when you think about it.
Her career had been, so obviously she dated Scott Disick in years past. She was quite
a child
and much younger at the time. And that was very well documented in every single story that ran about them, rightly so. And I think it placed her in a certain space on the like barometer of what's hot and what's not. And she became kind of this like extended kind of circle of the Kardashians, and that's not very valuable. And she was the sister of, you know, Nicole Richie, who that's not really that valuable because we want Nicole, we don't really want you. She wasn't this like influential fashion girly at the time. And then that ended. He got with some other inappropriately young girl, and then she kind of disappeared for a while off the kind of main space. Like, obviously fans and stuff still saw her, but like, she wasn't like in my ecosystem for a very long time. And then she just sprang back up with this wedding. Just for anyone who didn't know, like me, Elliot Grange, 30 years of age, a music executive. They got engaged last April after about a year of dating. His family, incredibly wealthy. His father is the CEO of Universal Music Group. Incredibly, 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 incredibly wealthy. Marrying another very wealthy girl. And it was just, I mean, it was, they were using this like old money elegance and like this old money glamour kind of stamp across all of the content. And like, everyone was saying, you know, she has literally created a new, like this new vibe that everyone
like
wants.
A royal wedding. Like, it's like a royal wedding, but a celebrity royal wedding. But like, the weirdest thing I think that you just said there, when you wrap your mind around it. So they were seeing each other for about a year, got engaged in April, but then spent a year prepping this wedding. Which means the prepping of the wedding process maybe lasted longer than the actual relationship has, which tells you all you really need to know about these people. If he's like a 24-year-old getting married, you know what I mean?
I will say, like, from all of the videos I have seen of her, of them interacting in her very short TikTok career, like, they do seem cute and happy and all that kind of stuff. And that's great.
She's 24. She doesn't know any different. She's happy. She was happy with Scott Disick before. Come on. Like, I am very cynical about this because I find it bizarre. Like, this is from somebody, when I have really bad anxiety, I read Vogue weddings religiously. Like, just the wedding articles.
That is just so niche.
They're
so
fucking
niche.
Ridiculous. It's always like, Bunny, Max Stevenson, met blah, 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 who's father is the count of blah blah, now they have their own island and like everybody wore blue from like the 1950s. Like, it's absolutely wild. It's so wild. So this was like that, like, played out large.
Yeah,
with like a little bit of celebrity attached to it. And I think,
yeah,
you know, it has a little bit of celebrity sheen, but like, I just think the fact that we were so bombarded with it is a way, it's so different. It's such a new thing. Because the way we used to be bombarded with celebrity weddings was, it was daft. It was like Jordan on the front of OK magazine, or it was,
you're waiting, you know, for the spread. Yeah.
Victoria and David Beckham and Brooklyn Beckham in that tiny little purple top hat in Ireland. It was a Stetson.
Oh God.
In Lutterell Castle.
I do all I can to not discuss Brooklyn Beckham. Like, it takes everything in me
even
to not.
Then, he knew he was absolutely idiotic.
But awful.
Like, that was, you know, that's what celebrity weddings were synonymous with.
Yeah.
But then he had the royal weddings, which were different. But then this is kind of a melding of those, but also, like you said, with that kind of old money, kind of aristocracy almost in off it. But it's a wedding that's created by pure people and stylists, because this girl doesn't know who she is. She's 24 years old, and it's not like she has She hasn't got a personality. Do you? Do you know where her personality is? Because I haven't got a fucking clue. Like, she's so blank to me.
Oh,
she's like,
I just was so
in that way. Like, just dead inside. 100%, rich children.
Yeah. But I was just like, I couldn't believe just how they were able to just capture this week and just dominate. I mean, and I think it's because it kind of ticked off a lot of boxes, right? It had this kind of old school money. It had, like, you know, the Lionel Richie and his kind of line. It had this kind of really wealthy English businessman and his family, and they were all fancy accents and all this stuff. It had that. It also had, like, millennial gold dust that is, like, Nicole Richie, Paris Hilton, all of those kind of celebrities from, like, the noughts that we just obsessed over, like Cameron Diaz, these kind of people. Good Charlotte performed at it. So, like, for us, it's like tick, 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 tick. But then you also had, like, this, like, new aesthetic that people are loving. And then you had all of these influencers who are all from very wealthy backgrounds as well, documenting this whole wedding around the social media sphere. And then you had Sophia launching her TikTok at the same time to do get ready with me's makeup tutorials, you know, styling sessions with her stylist and her team. I mean, she launched her TikTok 2 weeks ago. She has 1.7 million followers now. She has over 16 million likes, and she has over 125 million views on 13 videos that launched 2 weeks ago. That is insane. That is also insane.
That's it, love. That's the pinnacle of your life now, bitch. Because how are you going to top that? I'm sorry, but you're not. Like, there's no... Like, I think it's amazing as a feat of PR. I think it's actually incredible.
Incredible.
And it's so clever. Yeah. Like you said, it hit all of those boxes. And the way it was launched, I think they're called Banana Split, or her PR company, because she mentioned them about 5 times in a Vogue interview. So I guess that's who they are. They are, without a doubt, I'd say they're booked up for the rest of their life.
Incredible. Incredible.
Like, unbelievable. But,
and I mean, the styling, everything was amazing. Like, I don't want to get too into that because I feel like we're just exhausted from Met Gala stuff. But from that perspective, yeah, her agency, her management, her marketing team, her PR team, just wow.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Maybe they could only do that with a person that was like her, because you don't know much about them and you don't really care about them. So it's like,
Investment, you know, enough to be interested. Yeah.
So it was a sweet spot, because I think if they had a bigger profile as themselves, or more outspoken, or, you know, more of a personality, I don't know if it has been as successful as it was.
Yeah,
it was like,
I think,
launching a superstar.
It was insane. And because of that, she's not as known. Her personality isn't as known. Her work isn't as known. There wasn't, like, a lot of negativity to get around. There wasn't, like, things that they needed to iron out. She had literally vanished from, like, the public space, like, but definitely from the top headlines on the top, like, tiers of the tabloids. And it was just like a clean slate that they got to enjoy and just create this new person. Like, it was literally like she just walked out of some cryo chamber and was like, I'm ready to get married and I'm going to be perfection in 27 Chanel looks and my clean girl barely there blush. And it was just like, what the fuck? And there's also been a lot of comparison. I said we'd circle back to Kourtney Kardashian, her wedding to Travis Barker, the influence that they expected that to have and the influence it did. And then obviously Nicola Peltz and Brooklyn Beckham, another celebrity wedding that I think they felt it was going to be this thing. Because they did the Vogue spread, right? Like, right after the wedding. Yeah. Sophia Richie did Vogue wedding or Vogue video that day, and they were up that day. It was very much instant. We could consume the wedding along through the timeline. And I just think it came from a marketing team and a team that more clearly understood
the audience and the market
and what they want to consume, versus a team that was working with Kourtney Kardashian and what they do and feeding it out in the same way. And then Nicola Peltz and Brooklyn Beckham, who just seem to over exaggerate the influence that they thought these two people would have and the glamour that they thought that they would bring. And it's interesting to me to look at those three weddings and be like, wow, how differently Sophia
and how it's changed
is. Yeah,
and all, like, how it's changed so rapidly. Because I think, you know, with the Kardashians, we've seen so many event weddings for them that it doesn't feel special.
Yeah.
And also because of their show, it's almost like the show was trying to catch up with the reality. And by the time you see this wedding, it's like when Neighbours used to come in from Australia.
Yeah.
And it was like 8 months later, you're kind of like, oh yeah, we did this, whatever. Everyone looked like a spoiler shite. Like, we don't care about it anymore as much as we would have. And then with the whole like Brooklyn Beckham thing, they were trying to do it in a classical way and be like, we'll give it to Vogue and like we'll have this very prestige kind of feel from it because it's Vogue by its very nature, and not understanding that their audience, if they have an audience, don't buy Vogue. They don't care. The Vogue audience don't give a shit about them because they're trash.
Yeah.
Like they're not fashion people.
Yeah.
Like really, let's be honest. So they didn't like them either. So I think that's why this wedding has been so good, because it's a marketing team that know exactly who their audience is and how to exploit that.
Yeah.
And I'd say Hailey Bieber has them on speed dial and just repeatedly.
Sort me out. Yeah.
Help me.
It was incredible. It was so impressive. I mean, I don't know how she's going to keep up this momentum, but it was like, it was truly just amazing to see her literally capture every part of the internet and be like, I'm going to have you hanging on every word because I'm going to deliver them to you minutes after I have them spoken. Like, it was just an understanding of consumption of media that I haven't seen on many celebrity weddings as of late.
I don't think ever.
Especially when, you know, anticipation was so low. Like, nobody was like, oh, I can't wait for her to get married. She understood that she wasn't, you know, monetizing off of that. She was just going to create the excitement by delivering it straight away. Whereas I think Nicola Peltz and Brooklyn Beckham felt like there would be this anticipation, but nobody gave a fuck. Like, nobody cared.
And delivery in those bite-sized portions that people want. Like, I just think the whole get ready with me with the bridal party was a stroke of genius.
Yeah.
A stroke of genius. Like, I just, every inch of it was just, oh my God, they're an amazing team.
Yeah. Well done to you, Sophia Richie and team, and Elias, I guess. I'm sure he...
Whatever. That man barely has eyes.
For some of it.
In every photo, I was like, could he not open his eyes for his fucking wedding photos?
No, come here. I'm getting married abroad and I'm fucking terrified about being squinty McSquinterson in every single picture. So, Elliot, I'm sure I'll feel your pain. That's the only thing that I'll have in common with multi-millionaire Elliot Gray.
We don't know that.
Maybe he loves the pop culture rant. Who knows? You're welcome anytime. Finally, I want to discuss, we're a little bit late to this one, but I didn't want to, there's been a few updates the last few days, so I thought, let's monetize on that. Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell and these romance rumors that are just stuck to them like glue. These two have been filming an upcoming rom-com of Anyone But You in Australia over the last few months. And in recent months, there have been nonstop rumors about whether they're dating or not. And for no, like, bad reason. Like, there are lots and lots of reasons as to why people would be suspicious. There are lots of pictures of them being very, very cozy. Wow. Lots of pictures of her hanging out with him and his family at the zoo and, like, family dinners. And, you know, just being very comfortable with each other, very flirty. All of the stuff that you want to see from a duo starring in an upcoming rom-com. The conflict is that at the time, both of them were in relationships. Sydney is engaged to Jonathan Demino, and Glenn Powell was dating up until very recently. Gigi Paris.
I love that name. Is she a drag queen? That was my first thought.
Is she? I mean, that is a drag. I mean, someone got to take that like immediately. And that's where the kind of the lightning bolt underneath this story really took off, because it was like, oh, we've got all of these other people involved. And while there is this really, you know, compelling evidence that there is some kind of, you know, chemistry here, what does this mean for the partners and all this kind of stuff? There was clips of them doing promo at CinemaCon in Las Vegas last month, where they're being very flirtatious. There are lots of body language experts doing videos explaining. And if there's one thing I hate in this world, it is body language experts thinking that they are judge, jury, and executioner. But I was also like, ugh, I kind of see it. It's very complicated. And it got added, that complexity was magnified when Powell's girlfriend of 3 years, Gigi Paris, broke up with him, ended things. She unfollowed Sydney on Instagram, and then kind of seemingly confirmed that they had split. Sweeney was seen without her engagement ring for a couple of outings. And then not last night, the night before the Met Gala, her and Jonathan Demino were seen out on a date night. seemingly trying to kind of squash these month-long running rumors of her in a romance. Like, what is going on, Jen?
I love this. I was very excited because it's such an old school scandal.
Yes. Yes.
And it felt really good to me. And even if they are just selling a movie, they're selling it with
every
piece of their bodies.
There is nothing that makes me want to go see a rom-com in cinemas when it gets launched more than this shit.
Because you're just like, are they doing it? Are they doing it? Like, it's such a timeless scandal. It's like, you know, Brangelina. Mm-hmm. It's like Liz Taylor, you know, and Eddie Fisher. It's like such a cinematic,
so
like,
glamorous.
Trope in itself. Like, I love it. And like, Sydney Sweeney, like we're saying, she is basically like this 60s, 70s kind of bombshell. Like, she's having such a moment.
Yeah.
And like, whether it's with like a brilliant performance in Euphoria, I have to say, I think she's a really clever actress. And the way that, you know, the tabloids, or not even the tabloids, but just the press in general, are obsessed with every inch of her body.
Yeah.
It feels like an old school starlet moment.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, they'd be like, oh my God, like, you know, Angelina, can't get enough of her, or Cameron Diaz, or Julia Roberts. It feels like, you know, maybe not in the actor way, but definitely in the visual way, that it's an anointing of this new sex kitten.
Yeah.
And like, really leaning into that. And like, that video of the two of them together where he is dipping her for no reason. There's no reason why he should have his hands around her
on the couch, right? Like, they're like sitting. Yeah.
And just the two of them uproariously laughing. And then, like, she has all these behind-the-scenes photographs from the set. And they're all almost, like, of him just being hot with his top off. Like, and they're like, if I was his girlfriend, I would be flying to Australia immediately. Like, and, you know, Gigi, for her sake, like, she put up, like, a screenshot of Aretha Franklin, respect. And then, like, you know, that came out then, that they had broken up. And then they said, I think it's hard for Glenn Powell more than it is, I think, for Sydney Sweeney, because I think in a way, if you're classed as a homewrecker in Hollywood, you're classed as like a vamp, and you're classed as like, you know, sexual napalm, to use like a John Mayer's phrase. Good God, I never thought I'd do that. Like, you know, you're explosive and you're dynamite and people can't get enough of you. But like, if you're a guy, it's like you're a fuckboy. And like, he doesn't want to be seen as a dirty dog.
Yeah.
And they came out, his people came out with this ridiculous statement saying, like, you know, Gigi only unfollowed Sydney Sweeney because Sydney didn't follow her back. And it felt like this very childish way of trying to deflect issues. And his people are spiraling out of control.
What Whereas an awful just, defense, because she didn't follow her back.
They know. Ridiculous. It's like, well, I have a job, bitch.
Yeah.
And it's like, with him, I think it's just taken this kind of adverse effect with her. I forgot she was even engaged.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, who is that guy? Yeah. Oh, God. Like, and then the whole date night thing happened. And then the whole, like, the Daily Mail had pictures of him leaving their place with bags. And I was like, hey, I guess he's
probably. Yeah. Did he have a dog as well? There was like a dog and he had bags and it looked very damning. And then it was like, oh, no, I think he's just going to New York because she's got the Met Gala. And it was like,
I think it's okay. But like, I do think they would make a really cute couple.
Really cute couple. Very attractive.
So similar in the way that, and like, so similar in their careers as well, where it's just like, it could really ignite for them, it could really kick off for them. But we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if like, more news that is going to come out about it.
Yeah. And it also, like you said, it wouldn't surprise me if this just fizzled away with the movie when it releases. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think that's why we've enjoyed this story so much, is that it feels very Brangelina. It feels very that time where it was like, pictures of Brad and Angelina on set, and you know, Jen is flying out on holidays to get away from the drama, and it's like all this stuff that, I mean, in itself was very toxic, but this feels, we're more at a distance from these people now. It doesn't feel as intrusive. These are pictures that they're sharing on social media, clips that they're sharing on social media, that people are like, oh, yikes, I don't know how I feel about that. If you were my fella, like, I'm not 100% sure. Like, it just feels, again, like a masterstroke in PR for this movie, because fucking there as soon as it drops. I'm there, like, no bother.
Gave me that dopamine hit, that giddiness that you feel about Love Island. It was real kind of like that as well. You were like, "Whoa, how's this gonna pan out? This is great!" Like, I know if it, you know, I feel bad for people. Yes, don't.
Yeah, sorry, Jonathan.
Whatever's going on. But at the same time, it just felt really enjoyable. And I wasn't, because a lot of gossip at the moment can be just very depressing. And it's always about some straight man that did something terrible years ago or yesterday, or you know what I mean? Or like someone like Jonathan Majors getting arrested. Like it's very damaging and traumatic. Whereas this just feels like old school, grotty kind of gossip magazine fodder. And I think that's why everybody's been enjoying it and not treating it in the Brangelina way. Because I think even with Brangelina, which was a roller coaster, even that was kind of tainted because we loved her. It was Jennifer Aniston.
We loved Jen. I remember you. It also stars Dermot Mulroney, Michelle Hurd, Rachel Griffiths is in it. There's no release date, no mention of a platform for streaming release either. But filming, I think, has concluded, or they're nearly there. So make it that what you will.
It's the director of Easy A as well.
Yeah,
and like, Easy A is such a great like film of that genre that I think that's another reason why people are so excited for it too. Because of that. Well, if anybody knows how to steer that ship and make it fun, you know, we have, like, if it's like Easy A, we're already there. Like, so I think that's another layer of excitement about it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, other than the headline stuff that's been dominating our minds and every thought over the last week, what have you been loving, Jen? What things have been bringing you joy in the last week? Is it telly? Is it food? Is it the fact that the evenings are coming much later? What are you enjoying?
I have to say, I'm so annoying. Like, I put this on my Instagram story like every minute of the day. So I know, like, people that know me are like, oh God, please stop. So I'm going to tell other people at large. And I know it's halfway through the season ending, but not condoning that you find it somewhere online, but I am. Rain Dogs, the TV series Rain Dogs. It's one of my TV shows of the year. It's just completely captured my very existence for weeks. And it's like Daisy Mae Cooper. So from This Country, I just love her anyway. Yeah. And Jack Farthing. And it's written by Cash Carraway, who's this Irish writer who wrote the book Skin to Stay and Flesh Pot. She wrote two books, kind of a better background. And she's working class from like a pretty impoverished kind of background, living on a housing estate, and then moved to London and ended up becoming a stripper at like a peep show in Soho. And it's kind of loosely based on those two books, where it's about Daisy Mae Cooper's character. She's a budding writer she calls herself Costello Jones. She works at a peep show in Soho. She's trying to keep a roof over her head and her daughter's head. She's 10 years old and is just finding it really difficult. And then this man, Florian Selby, comes back into her life. He was just this dandy, complete bop, but totally toxic. Her best friend, who's gay. And it's about this platonic relationship, which is real. It is love, but they will destroy each other at the same time.
Okay.
And it's just beautifully done, but it's really kind of over the top. It's almost like OTT in a way. It's very heightened. So it's really funny, but also very extremely sad. So some of it you're like, this is not realistic. It's a real fantasy kind of, and it plays with that. But then also 2 minutes later, it'll bring it right back down to reality and go, God, you know, that's shocking. And I love that.
It's BBC, right? It's
BBC and HBO. So it's a joint kind of endeavor by them. But my God, it just blew me away. And I just wanted to watch all of it. But I wanted to watch all of it all the time.
Okay.
So I just didn't want to watch anything else. So I was like, no. And then I couldn't stop talking about it. And you know, when you get an evangelical and you're just going around to people, go, just watch this, please understand what I'm trying to get at. That's just been my life for the past like 6 weeks. It's so
I know I can watch it here in the UK on BBC iPlayer. In Ireland, where can you watch it? Is it Sky? Can you just watch it?
You can do a Skybox. You can download episodes on your Skybox. It's on BBC on Tuesdays at like 20 to 12, but it's halfway through the season now. So what I would recommend, if you cannot, you know, find it elsewhere on the net, is like just set it series link, and it will, I'd say they'll repeat it on BBC at some stage.
Yeah,
and
it'll be on the iPlayer anywhere, I'm sure, for people
100%.
In the UK. I see the trailers all the time for it. It's not been one. I devoured The Diplomat this weekend. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Have you watched
What's
this on
going
Netflix?
On with her hair? What's the stuff with her hair? I've only watched one episode and I was like, what's going on here?
It's Kerry Russell. It is just amazing. It is so good. It is so funny and dark, and it's a thriller, and there's a bit of romance in there. It's sad and then it's funny again. It's brilliant. It is so good. It is Kerry Russell. She plays Kate Wyler. She is being sent out to be the ambassador to some country. I can't remember where it is now, but she then is like, change path. She's sent to London, a job she doesn't want. She's then sent to be the ambassador to the UK. And she is like not happy about it. And then she finds herself wrapped up in this attack that happens on a British naval ship, where there's like 40 British civilians or British naval members that are killed. And she's kind of wrapped up in all the politics of that and trying to find out who did it and what's the appropriate response. She is married to a former ambassador who is kind of encroaching in her space and trying to make moves for her. And they have a very conflicted relationship, and she's trying to navigate that. And then she's got this team around her who are trying to see if she is appropriate for higher office. And it's all of these kind of running narratives throughout the series. And it's just brilliant. Like, it is so good. It was one of those things that I put on one episode before going to bed on like Saturday night. And then I stayed up to watch two more. And it was like, oh, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I need to go to bed. But it was like, I'm excited to wake up tomorrow and continue watching. It's brilliant. I'm a little bit late to the game. It's been out a couple of weeks, but if anyone hasn't watched it yet, it is so entirely worth it. That was not meant to be my love of the week, because the reason I was late to it was because, again, I don't know if you've seen the media previews for Queen Charlotte. I don't know if you're interested in Bridgerton.
Oh, yeah. They're waiting there for me. I haven't started it.
Well, 2 days, because everyone's going to be consuming that shit on Thursday. Thursday. I'm a big Bridgerton fan. I love it. It's candy-coated period drama, easy peasy. It's very sexy. It's very fun. It's very chattable on the internet. Queen Charlotte was very good. I just don't know if Bridgerton fans are going to love it. Like, hardcore Bridgerton fans that are going to expect Bridgerton, I'm not sure if it's going to deliver in the same way that Bridgerton, that they would hope for the main series to deliver.
Did you like the last season? Because I wasn't really thrilled with the last Bridgerton. I just thought it was wasn't too keen on it.
I liked it, but I didn't find it as
compelling as...
Yeah. I didn't find it as like Moorish as that first season. Uh-huh. I remember that first season, it was like, I was like racing through it. And then I felt like almost this like weird feeling of grief when it was over. Cause I was like, oh my God, that was such a beautiful Candyland romance, exciting space. And now it's gone and I don't know when I'll get it back. And this season two didn't have that same grip. But I also just wonder, is that because the kind of newness of it was gone, and we kind of, of that magic was gone because we knew it. Like, I wonder if you swap the series, would it still have been disappointing? I don't know. Like, I really like Jonathan Bailey. I thought someone actually was incredible in it.
She's great. I thought she was great in it.
Oh, good.
I just didn't think they had that chemistry from the first season. Yeah, I didn't think their chemistry was as exciting or intriguing, or wanted to see more of it. I was kind of like, yeah, okay. Like, whereas like the first season, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Rip each other's clothes off.
Like, yeah, it was very sexually charged that first season, wasn't it? Like, it was, I think it had a lot of, it had a lot of people just kind of, that was what a lot of people were watching for, I think, was just that it was like so fucking horny. And like, the second one was definitely not. Tamer. Although there definitely was a few moments where Jonathan Bailey was quite fucking horny, and it was like, oh God, I'm really glad I don't watch this like with my mom. And I also just found like Rae John Page, like, controversial opinion, I think, in some corners. I just don't like him. I don't
find him attractive.
No,
I don't.
He's so like boring to watch in real life and in his press rounds and stuff, that I'm like, I just don't find you a compelling leading man, as much as Jonathan Bailey is incredibly charming and like really funny and charismatic. And I just didn't find that as much with Rae John Page. Anyway, Queen Charlotte is coming on Thursday, May 4th, to Netflix. It is definitely worth a watch, if only because season 3 of Bridgerton is taking far too long to come. Anything else that's caught your eye this week? Jen, I know I only told you to have one, but is there anything that jumps out, seeing as I selfishly had two picks?
Only just Married at First Sight Australia. Now it's winding up.
Once all we finish this, I'm diving into the second episode of Final Vows and I'm fucking buzzed for it.
So all I do is like lie there on my own on the couch, and this is my secret single behavior, like Carrie Bradshaw used to talk about, and continuously talk to myself in an Australian accent while it's on, like in the background. I'll repeat something that somebody has said about Laurie. What are you thinking? I don't think that's cool. Like all the time. I'm so annoying to myself, but I'm going to miss it so much. There's a hole in my heart.
Good. It's so good. Mel and Leighton's Final Vows were last night, and she's like, you know that TikTok where it's like, imagine being Australian and saying the word so, and you're just eating those, and she's like, sorry. And it's like, oh, I love it, Mel.
I'm going to just melt. I can't wait.
Like, so good. And then one of the experts, Mel, like, off the world.
Just Harrison as a demon. Like, if we were doing this, like, it was, you know, my blood on paper.
Can you imagine if he was on Love Island?
Ooh, I'm just thinking that all the time.
I think about it all the time. Like, I would not get a night's sleep the whole series. Nope. Because it would just be, it would be horrific. It would be horrific if he was on Love Island. I would actually have to stop. I don't think I could do a series of him being on Love Island. Like, I would
absolutely horrific. The worst person I've ever seen on reality TV in a long, long time.
Horrific.
And unbelievably compelling viewing.
Yeah.
I desperately wanted something terrible to happen to him.
Yeah. I'm very excited for the reunion dinner.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of it be spoiled on TikTok already. And I saw a clip of the experts being like, I didn't see what had happened, but they're discussing it amongst themselves in their little creepy CCTV booth. And they're like, this is the first time in the entire experiment Harrison has zero control. He has entirely lost the room. People are literally laughing at him trying to defend himself. And I, as much as that's a horrible feeling for him, it is thoroughly deserved because he has been
necessary for him.
Run because this production has no idea what Jim Carrey is. He has been let run wild and destroy multiple couples in there. So I'm excited for people to just be like, do you know what, pal? We're not listening to you anymore because you're talking absolute
shite. And like, it's necessary for him to grow as a person, to realize that and to hear that from people and not block it out and not run away from it or not get validation from his little mates about it. Like, he needs to hear that from people. And also, I never thought my heart would break for somebody like it did for Jesse.
Oh, I know. No, honestly, I feel bereft even thinking about the series ending. I just love it so much.
And we'll say, if there's anybody listening that hasn't, just watch it all. It's all there on all four. And my God, it's a treat.
It's so good. Kean Sullivan was on last week and he's not usually a fan of these shows. And that was my love of the week last week. And I was like, Kean, it's just so good. I actually need to check in to see if he dived into it, because it is just, it's just bingeable beyond bingeable. It is. You will race through it. It is so good.
It's totally addictive, and you will sit around going,
I can't believe it. Oh, God. There was a scene weeks ago where Harrison said something, and Bronte, his wife, was like, "You did this," and he was like, "No, that's what you did to me." And Mel, one of the experts, is like, "He flipped it. He flipped the script." And now every time someone does that in real life, I keep going, "He flipped the script." Like, I need to stop.
Also,
this wildly insulting impression.
Not one of them knows what gaslighting means.
No.
Proper. They say it every 2 seconds. They're like, that's gaslighting, mate. She's gaslighting you. And it's like, no, she's just disagreeing with you. Shut up.
Oh, God.
Just essential viewing.
Okay, Jen, we need to go watch this episode.
Yes,
so let's finish this one. Jen, thank you so much. That was very fun. And I actually love that deep dive into, like, the Met Gala. It's space in pop culture. Do we give a fuck? Kind of. Do we feel bad about it? Kind of. Thank you for being here, and go enjoy Married at First Sight. It's such a good one.
Middle.
Oh,
it's,
I love it so
much.
Thanks so much to this week's guest, Jen Gannon, and thank you to you guys for tuning in each and every week. You can find us on Instagram at don'tquoteme.podcast and on TikTok at Orla Condon. Come say hi. You can also find us on all of your favorite podcast apps, so you can listen whenever and wherever you like. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode and all the latest pop culture news. We'll talk to you then.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.